The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy, and how you can make the most of your own life, right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan, and I'm especially happy about today's show. Today is going to be fun for me because I get to do something that I don't often get to do. I get to talk at length with my friend Doug Smith, who's a psychiatrist in Juneau, Alaska. You'll get to meet Doug Smith if you come to our conference, our first empathic therapy conference in Syracuse, New York, April 8th and 9th of this year, not long away. And by the way, the hotel is beginning to fill up. So it's important to register now, and you get all that information on empathictherapy.org. Before I begin to talk with Doug, I want to tell you about something else very exciting that I did this Sunday, one of the more challenging and scary things I've done in my recent career, stepping totally out of my usual box, which is not really a box. It's more exciting than that. I have been trying to figure out for some time how I could demonstrate to people how I do therapy, how I could do a demonstration film. I've been very much against using my own patients. I don't feel that patients or clients are in a position to say, sure, doc, I'm happy to be filmed by you. I feel that that they're in too vulnerable a position to say, no, I don't want to do that. So I have never filmed or recorded my patients when I've been in private practice. I only did some recording as part of my training. I also train graduate students in counseling at SUNY Oswego in how to do therapy, but I didn't feel good filming my practice sessions with them either because, again, they're vulnerable and they're just students. I'm the professor. I don't want to take advantage of them. So I finally found a way out of my dilemma. I set up a private invitation-only workshop for volunteers to come and have a training workshop in therapy in exchange for which they would be patients. And I would interview them. And they could play patients. That is, they could invent something, or they could be themselves. And as it turned out, just about everybody decided to be themselves and to have a photographed film therapy session. And I did this for 6 hours on Sunday. It was an incredible experience. We got marvelous film. And at some point, that means there'll be a training film based on the seminar, really the workshop that I did this weekend. And it also, the film will also be available almost certainly by the conference, April 8th through 10th, and will be a part of the conference. We will probably in a more private setting, not in the full floor, but where people can choose to come if they have a special interest. People will be able to come and see the training film that we're going to create. So I'm really, really excited about this. It was an intense and marvelous experience of real, genuine human contact. It wasn't at all artificial. So I'm really looking forward to editing the film and creating something for all of you who are interested in my ideas, my thoughts, my approaches to therapy. And the basic theme wasn't mimic Peter Bragan. In fact, I got critiqued. I had my colleagues there, professors who critiqued what I did. The idea was to bring out the best in yourself as a therapist, and also the same principles apply to any kind of listening and helping, to bring out the best in yourself so you can bring out the best in the people you're trying to help. And it was just really an astonishing and wonderful experience. And with that, I want to introduce you to Doug Smith, who is a psychiatrist in Juneau, Alaska. And Doug, you're online, I think, aren't you?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, good. Am I coming along loud and clear?
I hear you loud and clear, yes.
Yes, and I hear you well, too.
Although I do have to listen to you over the noise of a space heater. My office is cold today, and I had to turn on the space heater to keep warm, but I'm with you.
What is the temperature in Alaska right now?
Oh, it's actually, I'm not sure. I think it's like 10 or 12 degrees here right now, but the problem is my office building is not heated because it's a holiday, Martin Luther King Day, so I'm having to use a space heater to supplement that.
Well, it was 11 here this morning, which is one of our colder days. We do, of course, go below zero, but it was 11 this morning, and I've turned off my space heater, but I've got steam heat in the background, so I'm not cold. Doug, we chatted some on the phone. Introducing you is like introducing a personal friend, so I'm just going to speak of you in that manner. Doug has been psychoanalytically trained, but he's gone way beyond that to, I think, a more marvelously person-centered, humanistic, caring approach to therapy that is, I suspect, similar to mine, although it's always hard to know. Doug has retired as an officer in the United States Public Health Service, where he was in charge of clinics in Alaska. And since they were clinics, he couldn't just not give medications at all, but I'm sure cut way back on meds. In private practice now, I'll be interested to hear how Doug, although I have some idea, but I think you'll be interested to hear how Doug juggles the issue of medication, which is not his favorite choice. Of course, I don't use medication at all in my practice, except to withdraw people from meds or to give someone meds who's been on them for years and just can't get off them. I don't start people on meds ever. So I'm interested to hear from Doug about that. And of course, I have a very spiritual approach to therapy. When people believe in God, I bring their beliefs in God right in, whatever the spiritual beliefs are, into the therapy, because human beings live by their spiritual values. And with that introduction, I'm kind of want to just hand the ball to Doug for a few minutes if you're ready for it.
Oh, yes, sure. One thing I wanted to comment on was this, what you did over the weekend sounds so fascinating to me. I hope I get an opportunity to see this tape sometime. I think most of us who have been trained as therapists really long for the experience of seeing how other people do it. Some people might be surprised. Even trained therapists often don't get that opportunity because the privacy of the office with doctor and patient is pretty sacrosanct. And that's a good thing for the patient and the doctor, I suppose, the therapist. But for someone in training, we're often really deficient in our ability to just really see mentors or see experts and see how it's done. We can hear them describe how it's done. We can read books about how it's done. Probably the closest we usually come is having our own therapy, and I can see how someone works with me, but I'm often very curious, how would someone else with a lot of experience and knowledge handle the issue I'm facing right now with the patient that's in my office, you know? So what you did, Peter, sounds really valuable to me, to give people a real practical view. It's a very clever way to do it. And I just had a comment.
One of the things, Doug, that struck me in regard to what you're saying is that my students were watching tapes from Carl Rogers from 40 years ago. They were watching two or three old-time humanistic therapists interview the same patient, showing the different styles. But it was literally decades and decades ago. In this workshop, Doug, one of the things that was so interesting was that I would talk to the person for half an hour or 40 minutes, then I would ask for feedback, and the therapist would make suggestions, and I would acknowledge the value of the suggestions, and then I would proceed to take their suggestions and continue the interview. It was so dynamic, and it made so clear that it's just not one way to do things.
That's interesting, yeah. And one comment you made, too, is most of the people in the workshop apparently chose to be genuinely themselves. I like that phrase that you use, genuinely themselves. I think we as therapists always have to be genuinely ourselves. We can never be role-playing or acting in the genuine healing situation. I think that's one of the key ingredients. And it sounds like even in this workshop, you were genuinely you. You were helping people, and in most cases they were genuinely them. I think in our therapy we always have to be ourselves, because it's that real human connection, the empathic connection, that really forms the nucleus of healing.
Oh, absolutely. One of the volunteers was a college student I've known for years. I actually would go with her parents and watch her perform on stage in high school. Lovely, marvelous woman. And she just happened to be, she did some pastries for the workshop as a favor. So I said, how would you like to play a wounded college student? She said, oh, I can do that. And she played what turned out to be an experience with a previous boyfriend. And I can say this because she's not a patient. This was a public event, and she's going to be in the film, and she just so deeply immersed into it. And when we were done, I asked her, I said, am I actually looking and behaving any differently than the person you've known as a friend of your mother's family, of your father and friend of yours? And she said, no, it's basically you. But of course I was just so much more engaged, and I told her, I've just told you things I wanted to tell you for years about how wonderful you are. I got a chance because you played patient with me. It was a wonderful experience.
And I would say, you know, you raised a question about medications in your introduction, too. One of the odd positions I find myself in is I personally would not take psychiatric medicines. Just knowing what I know, seeing what I've seen, having experienced. And by the way, I have taken psychiatric medicines, not therapeutically for myself, but when I was in training, I used to take a tablet or two of any pill that I prescribed to anyone, because I wanted to know what it felt like. But anyway, that, I don't know if people can do that nowadays, but when I was in training, that was possible, and I did it.
Well, you can do it because, you know, you always have pills lying around from your patients when you're in training. You know,
yeah.
You're the only other person I know that ever did that. I took a dose of Thorazine, a minimal dose at night, so it wouldn't impair me to see what it was like, which was a big initial antipsychotic. And I happened to have difficulty with my eye coordination. I woke up in the morning, looked in the mirror, and I saw two distinct heads looking back at me. Thought, oh, my God, if this happened to somebody who was out of touch with reality.
Yeah, well, and just what I would often feel is just, you know, the unpleasant, it's hard to describe, just kind of a stiffness or a tightness, or just, you just feel like you're not yourself. And so no wonder, you know, like the Katie study the NIMH ran, what is it, like only 7% of people remain on their antipsychotic medicines a year later? I don't have the study memorized, but it's a surprise.
And you can be sure those were bullied into staying.
Well, it's surprisingly few people that really want to take these or would on their own take these medicines, at least for very long. Well, so anyway, I'm speaking of being genuinely me. I do prescribe medicines, but even though I wouldn't want to take them, you know, especially since good therapies are available, psychotherapies, and I have found this so healing for myself in my life and in my training. So my treatment of choice would always be a good therapy, even for severely disturbed people, which a lot of people don't even know that good therapies are available in some situations. But the problem we have, though, I think, is that we live in a pluralistic world, and it's almost like a religious belief system about psychiatric medicine sometimes. People will sometimes hold very strong beliefs, or at least they have a particular way of looking things, a worldview that's different from mine. And I find it important to meet people where they are and not at all be dishonest about where I am. But just like I wouldn't try to change someone's religious view, that's not really my goal. I also find it necessary sometimes to work within their own belief system about medications. And I also think it's very helpful to be aware of your writings. I think your book on brain disabling treatments in psychiatry. When I read that years ago, that really was eye-opening to me, because you begin to get a much bigger picture of what these medicines are actually doing and how it is that they quote-unquote work. And so when I have that perspective, I think I'm able to prescribe medicines in a way that my main goal is to keep people safe, and then to engage the treatment, to build the connection. And very often I'm taking people off of medicines. The most common thing I get is people come to me and they're already on medicines, and we're able over time to work off of that. But I never force it on people or go beyond their comfort, imposing my own personal beliefs, which, as I said, I wouldn't take the medicines myself. But I think
it's, Doug, how much do you tell your patients that you what you feel about meds?
I never conceal it. So I never feel like I'm being dishonest. But I also think that you have to use good judgment and kind of tact about how you approach it. Because if you have someone that's been on a medicine for a while and they're very much relying on it, and it's part of their belief system, I don't think I want to really undermine that right away. I find it helpful to just kind of make sure that we have good informed consent if I'm going to be the one writing your prescription, so that they know kind of the things that any reasonable person would want to know about the risks versus benefits of a medicine. But I don't really go right, I think this is what your question is getting at, is going to the more philosophical viewpoints or belief system viewpoints about the way I view medicines, not right away. Now, if they show an openness to that, if they ask me questions, then yes, by all means, I'll answer very honestly.
Now, I take a very different approach, and it's fun to talk about it, because I deeply respect you and what you do. I actually tell the caller on the phone what my beliefs are. So if you call me, and this happened today, and you don't know who I am, you just call on a psychiatrist in Ithaca, I say, do you know who I am? The person says no. I tell them that I'm a psychiatrist who doesn't believe in psychiatric meds, that I'm one of the few around, that I mostly see people on meds to help them come off, and that I treat people without meds, don't start people on meds, and that they can find out about me on my website and think it over. And the person today said, gee, I don't even go on the internet. I said, wait, you stop at the library and look at my books. But I want you to know before you come what my views are. Otherwise, you're coming thinking you're coming to an ordinary psychiatrist, and then you find yourself in a session with different views. But I think it's very appropriate for you to do what you're doing, because you're willing to prescribe to people simply because they believe in it and feel it's helping them, and I'm sure, providing you don't see anything horrendous happening. Whereas my feeling is, I'm not going to do that.
Well, and I actually have done what you say you do. Sometimes I do that. And I'm just thinking in my mind, it may be hard for me to describe in a credible way why sometimes I would do that and sometimes not. But I would summarize it like this. Well, and another factor is I wear different hats. Sometimes the work I'm doing is in different locations where the expectation is medication management, like in a community mental health center. I have, different little jobs that I do here. I'm not just a practicing therapist in my office. But if someone's calling me in my therapy office, sometimes I will say exactly what you just modeled there, what you said. But the main principle, I think, is I want to meet people where they are at. I would hold that very valuable. And sometimes that means letting them know exactly where I'm at. But sometimes that means holding back a bit on that. We could apply that broadly. It's not just medication, but issues of fee or religious beliefs or political persuasions. There's a lot of things that I don't, show all my cards on right away, even though I don't feel like I'm being deceptive or concealing anything. If someone asks me, I'm likely to give them an honest answer on any of those issues. But the overall principle, and this kind of goes to what we were saying earlier about being genuinely yourself, but the other thing besides being genuinely yourself is I really want to meet people where they are at, where they're at when they come in the door for that first meeting with me, making that empathic connection with getting inside their world and their belief system and starting from there and then helping them expand their belief system and their world, especially where their belief system is not holding up for them anymore. And that may be on the issue of medicines, but it might be on, you know, a large range of issues where their worldview, their way of thinking about things just isn't holding up anymore. And that's why they're in your office, if you think about it. That's why they're coming for help.
I really like your definition of therapy, you know, with the exception we have about how soon to talk about the medication issues. Uh-huh. I totally agree. I think you just beautifully describe what therapy is about, getting into the other person's worldview, not your own. Genuine empathy is seeing the world from the other person's viewpoint. It's not putting your viewpoint into their shoes and saying, well, if I were in your shoes, I wouldn't put up with that, or I would do this or that. It's getting into their shoes,
right,
and then seeing what you can add to move along their world to a better place for them.
That's right. And in fact, I think that's a nice definition of therapy, is helping people to see more perspectives, more viewpoints, seeing things from angles maybe they had never considered before. Because a lot of times we get stuck. We get stuck in our worldview, our narrow theories, our model of how things ought to be. And if we're stuck, life will always give us something that will challenge that area that we're stuck in, and life will become very painful for us. And if we can meet with someone that has some maturity and depth to their own mental health, their way of thinking, and they can hear where we're stuck, and it's like I'm speaking from the patient's viewpoint, we can hand it over to the therapist and say, here's where I hurt, here's where I suffer, and I don't know what to do. And if the therapist is able to take that in and process it and think about it out loud with the client, the patient, then that can be wonderfully healing, because then it can open up new possibilities, new viewpoints, new ways of thinking, where you were stuck before and where you were hurting. I think it's
We think so much alike. It's astonishing. How much emphasis do you put on childhood? And I'm going to guess that it has a lot to do with how much emphasis the patient wants to put on it.
Yes, it does. It depends on how much they want to put on it. And what I come into the office with, I think development is very important. I think a lot of what we struggle with has to do with things that happened to us at very early ages, and ways of thinking, theories that we developed that are too rigid, too narrow, and we're stuck in them. So I have a kind of developmental viewpoint. But on the other hand, I don't find it necessary to reconstruct the past history. It's because you're dealing with it now. You're dealing with it here and now, right here in the room. And also, you know, in between sessions during the person's life today with their partners and their family and their friends and their boss, that's where it shows up. And so you don't, in my mind, have to always reconstruct the history in like in a Freudian way, you know, to bring about some healing.
I think of it very similarly in terms of what we need to do, not just in therapy but in life, is to discover our self-defeating patterns. And if those patterns go back to childhood, as they often do, it may be useful to know that you withdraw in fear when you're dealing with your family as an adult. Now you're the father, but you withdraw in fear at times, to know and remember how you did that with your own dad or your own mom. But it isn't an absolute necessity, but it's an important aspect to go back and see the patterns, particularly if the person is inclined to do so with you. What about responsibility, Doug? I see responsibility and helping people grasp what that means is something very important. Do you think in those terms or use other language?
I probably don't use the word responsibility a lot, but I'll bet if we talk this through, we'd find out that we think alike, very, very much alike again. Because what I often think of is ownership. I think what we can do as therapists is give people ownership, help them to claim ownership for themselves of their own lives. And very often what happens, for example, when someone comes in for therapy, we see the cause of our suffering as being external. It's everything around us. It's that bad boss. It's the, you know, the cruelty of the world. And of course there's always some truth to that. But the other level of truth, which is often missing, is our own ownership of it, which means ownership of our reactions to it, ownership of our contributions to it, ownership of our own emotional internal life. And I think that probably is closely related to what you're speaking of as responsibility.
It's exactly the same. It's totally okay. The same. Doug, we have a caller. I was thinking of waiting until the second half, but if he's there, Howard from South America, Katie, is he there now? We could bring him in.
We have him, yep.
All right, let's get a call. We have only about 5 minutes at this point in time, but 4 minutes. Let's hear from Howard.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
This is Peter Bregan.
Hi, Peter. This is Albert Ferguson calling.
Oh, it's Alberto, my buddy, my friend, Alberto. Join in and then stay online after the break, Alberto. Have you ever met Douglas Smith, two dear friends of mine?
No, I haven't met Dr. Smith, and I'm looking forward to meeting him in April at the conference, and I was fascinated by the dialogue you two have been having, so I thought I could pop in, but I could perfectly well wait for 5 minutes to keep the format. And I'll let you know my views on what you were discussing in a couple of minutes so that you can finish this piece of the program before.
Okay, let's do that. Douglas, this is Alberto Ferguson, who works in Colombia with people who are on the street, homeless people, and then brings them from the street and teaches them self-rehabilitation without the use of drugs. And you two will love each other. You will really connect at the conference. Doug, further thoughts that you may have before we go to a brief break?
Well, I'm fascinated to meet Alberto now. It sounds like we'll hear some of his thoughts, I suppose, after the break. But I think it's really nice to point out that what we're talking about are principles that can be broadly applicable, not just to the one-on-one doctor therapy relationship in an office. But here's someone who works with homeless people on the streets. And, you know, I'm interested to hear more about that. But it underscores what we're talking about, I think, principles of life that apply not only to therapy.
Totally, and one of the points I made in the workshop that will be a film that you can see at the conference in April when you see Doug and you meet Alberto Ferguson. One of the points I made is that the principles are identical for life and for therapy. What is advantageous in therapy is the protections. Because you're a professional, because you're not going to allow certain kinds of relating to go on, particularly sexual relating, because you won't relate intensively to the person outside of therapy, you can be even more yourself as a therapist and even more yourself as a patient because it's protected. It's almost utopian in its protections. But the same good principles apply to family life, to all of our life together. Doug, a couple of words on where you see the spiritual life in therapy. I know it's so important in your personal life.
Well, that's a huge issue. For a couple words,
we have
60
seconds. So, anything else you want to comment on?
Well, no, issue, I would say that when we get into spiritual issues, I think, there's so much to say here. I think it's very important to pay attention to the different kinds of thinking that we can do. And roughly, I think human beings think in two different ways. One is kind of the logical, scientific, verbal way of thinking, but there's another way of thinking that people generally nowadays are much less in touch with, and that is the more dreamlike thinking or the daydreaming and the narrative thinking, and including then intuition and spirituality, I would put in those categories. And I think as therapists, very often what we are needing to do is introduce people more to that side of themselves, the spiritual, intuitive, dreamlike way of thinking, which in our society today is not very valued usually.
Well, let's go and pick up on that when we come back after the break. We'll go and bring Doug Smith and Alberto Ferguson together, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of naturalnews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site consumerwellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
Hi, you're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
Hello, I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and you can hear my program, If You Love This Planet, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Sunday at 3 p.m. Please join me as I interview a huge variety of special guests from around the world about a range of topics, including the health of the planet and prescriptions for survival. So, if you do love this planet, tune in to the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan, welcoming you back to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour. And we began with my special guest and dear friend, Doug Smith, psychiatrist from Juneau, Alaska. And now we plummet down to the other side, vertically, of our planet, to my friend Alberto Ferguson, another marvelous psychiatrist who's in Colombia, South America, who just called in. Doug was talking about spirituality at my request, and let me just pick up now with Alberto and say hi to you. Hello, Alberto.
Hi, Peter. How are you today?
And I'm really marvelous today, and Doug, you're there too?
I'm here still, yes.
All right. Alberto, some comments on what you've been listening to, and then I want to hear some more from Douglas. And then, Alberto, in I haven't talked to you about this yet, but after our conference in April, I want to have you on the show for at least 1 hour. You've already been on a fair amount as a guest, but I want you to have your own hour, and we'll arrange that. But some comments on the show and on what we've been talking about.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you, Doug, if I may. I'm really looking forward to meeting you, Doug. Well, I was so fascinated to listen to both of you. I'm scared in a way when I listen to both of you, because as you can imagine, I'm used to listen to have different opinions with most of my colleagues because of the approach I have. So your conference and your center and your group of people, Peter, is kind of a, in a certain way, it's a safe haven for me, because I very seldom agree with what most of my colleagues say. Unfortunately, I have to say that. So it's interesting to once in a while see that at least in the basics we agree, and that I'm not alone in this struggle. Regarding what you were saying, it's interesting that you had two slightly different positions with regard to the approach of medications in the patients. And probably I'll tell you very briefly my approach on that, which is probably a third position, which in the long run we agree, but we have different emphases, I would say. It's interesting for the people to listen to them. I because I work with people diagnosed with schizophrenia, of course most of the people I face initially are taking drugs, because there's a myth around, a completely unscientific statement, that all people with schizophrenia must use medication for life. That's a myth. I hope to be able to demonstrate that in the conference in April. That's certainly not true. That's certainly not scientific. All the evidence shows different things. But I think that the information has been manipulated in a way that it looks like science says that everybody with, diagnosed with schizophrenia must use medication and for life. So that's something we'll discuss in the future. But what I want to say is, in my case, I don't do as much as you do, Peter, in the sense that I would tell people that they should, that I would never agree with using medication. What I do is I do try to have people study all the scientific information we have available for that, the really scientific information about what medication is, all that we all ignore about it, all its side effects, but not with the small printed letter that people usually read them, no? We really, in our program, we have people enter into a course, a preliminary course, where they have to really study all that science knows about medication and all that science ignores. And with that, we feel comfortable what would happen afterwards. But because we have to combine what the arguments I have against medication, I have to combine them with my belief in free choice, in freedom. So that's a tricky point, but I think that the way we've been able to handle it is kind of really forcing, in the best sense of the word, that people really have the scientific information available. And it happens that once people have that information in a really scientific way, many people, I would say most of the people, decide that they must try other alternatives instead of medication. And we would never prescribe medication, We would just, if someone is taking it and somebody else prescribed it, okay, they can be in the program, they can be with us, but we won't prescribe it directly, and we would try to force that they have the information with regard to it. That's kind of more or less our position on that. Are you there, Peter?
Well, yeah, it's not so different from mine. If one of my patients wants to take medication from another physician, and that does happen on occasion, there's a GP giving them Zoloft or Paxil. It's usually a GP because people don't generally go to two psychiatrists. I just give them the information and refer them to literature and let them know why I'm concerned about their taking it. But I don't say I won't work with you. But I won't start one of my patients on meds. But it's very good to hear your alternative view. Let me return to Doug. First, with the caveat that Alberto deserves, as Doug does, 40 hours on my show, and I'm going to be having both of them back frequently over the coming year. But this is my first time having Doug on the show. Let me come back to you, Doug. And where would you like to take off on, commenting on the meds or moving on with the spirituality issue?
Well, the spirituality issue is far more interesting to me, I have to say.
Go with it.
One point about Alberto, what he said that I would like to reinforce, though, and that is that there is actually, I think, a lot of information out there that would support non-medication treatments for even severely disturbed people, people diagnosed with schizophrenia, for example. But a lot of times that information is just not known. There's kind of a hegemony of information that kind of, you know, if there's not a brand name marketing behind it, a lot of people never hear about it. More and more, though, it's coming to the fore, and I think most psychiatrists are beginning to be exposed to more and more information, like research is showing cognitive behavior therapy, for example, to be effective for psychotic disorders, and certain models, treatment models, even for psychosis that don't rely on medications that are getting surprisingly good outcomes. And I think over time, at least I'm optimistic, that people will begin to learn more and know more, because right now it's hard to find good, balanced information.
One of the things, Doug, that I did in my workshop this weekend that, again, will be filmed and will be seen, hopefully, we get it together in time, at our conference in April, along with Doug and Alberto and a lot of other folks, one of the things I did was I invited an experienced therapist to play somebody who was very suicidal, very depressed, and hearing voices. It didn't feel it was fair to even invite somebody that disturbed to come and present themselves for therapy. I thought that would be unfair. So I do show what I believe is a good approach to helping people who are very disturbed. And I think that it's worth discussing because it's a continuation of what we're talking about today. From my viewpoint, psychosis is nothing more than a loss of trust in other human beings, where you get fearful and humiliated and hurt by other human beings, and you withdraw from them into a world which, as you called it, said, is dreamlike, a dreamlike, rather nightmarish world for most people who withdraw into psychosis. Excuse me. So then the alternative is to become a person worthy of that distressed human being's trust, to be someone, from my view, who won't drug them, won't involuntarily hospitalize them, won't diagnose them and manipulate them, but is genuinely interested in what they're feeling, what they're thinking, even in the voices and the content of their voices and what it says about what they're feeling. And that when you do this, you can make contact sometimes with very disturbed persons in a matter of minutes. When they begin to see you're interested in them, they will begin to shut aside the worst of the psychosis and to try to talk with you. Doug, is that your experience?
That is my experience. I have had the pleasure, the privilege of doing psychotherapy with a number of people with severe disturbances like we're talking about, and I have to say it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. It's just so beautiful to see someone that is so frightened and terrorized and in a paranoid place, and to see them be able to over time, actually, right away, sometimes you see something happen just from being treated with respect, like a fellow human being. You know, like what you're talking about there can have some right away some real benefits, but also then over time to see them begin to loosen up and let go of some of their paranoid places where they go in their mind and be able to see things differently. And now I'm using the same language I was talking about earlier about therapy in general, whether it's psychosis or whether you're dealing with a very emotionally healthy person. I think I love the concept of therapy as being the process by which we help people to see things from different viewpoints and open up a more imaginative, creative thinking process so that we're not stuck in a rigid box of a kind of narrow-mindedness or single-theoried or paranoid place. And I find the concept of dreaming to be extremely helpful for me in that. And by dreaming, I don't mean just what happens at night, although I include that. But I actually think that what happens at night happens around the clock, day and night. But in the daytime, it's more in the background. We are always dreaming our experiences. We're kind of at an unconscious or not conscious level. We're not always aware of it. We're processing bits of emotional data and dreaming them, making sense of them. And then we kind of have this higher level, so-called, of mental functioning that kind of translates it into our more everyday kind of experience. But I think it's so helpful, especially in intensive therapies, to help people to see and use the dreamlike thinking, which is always going on, and to tune into it and to become aware of it, because it is the thinking which where we often get stuck, and also which, when you can unstuck it, it really opens you up to creative thought, seeing things from different viewpoints, seeing solutions that you never saw before. And for me, that's so much more valuable than teaching solutions. You know, I don't consider what I do to be didactic or educational. And some therapies are, and you know, they can do some very good things that way. You know, giving advice or taking a cognitive approach. But I think I take it a step further or a step deeper, if you want to look at it that way. And rather than just giving solutions, open people up to different viewpoints and perspectives, and then many times the solutions just present themselves. They're there. They become obvious. They can become unlocked with a new way of thinking.
You're listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour. You're listening to my original guest, Douglas Smith, a psychiatrist who's a dear friend, and then my caller, Alberto Ferguson, another psychiatrist who's a dear friend, two of the finest psychiatrists in the world, Douglas in Juneau, Alaska, and Alberto in Columbia. Alberto, thoughts about what we're talking about in terms of relating to disturbed people?
Yes, Peter. Yeah, when I listen to what you're saying and what Doug is saying, you see, the good thing about that is that I kind of begin to feel that I would like to re-enter therapy with either of you. It would be a great experience. In a way, you know, that probably that was the good thing that we as psychoanalysts, when we were trained as psychoanalysts, had to do, not that we have to undergo psychoanalysis. Probably nowadays we don't have to do that, but it is true that it's important that we therapists become, grow up and become genuine and really face a creative attitude. So I think that one of the most important things we agree on is what you and Doug are saying about the importance of respect, love, of the spiritual peace of the person, to really get the best out of people. I think that's what this group has in common. That's our main goal. No? We don't like to kind of feel that person is just a symptom or just a pathology or just a diagnosis, but that we really recognize that the person we have in front is a person in its fullest sense, and we acknowledge that and we work with that. And I think that that's why we include spirituality, and we would include anything that's really a basic piece of a human being. And I think that that's a big change in psychiatry. And I think that Psychiatry as such is a great thing, and I think that psychiatry would benefit a lot if it would be in sort of full of this type of thought. And I think it's coming, as Doug said. I think there's a change going on, and new generations of psychiatrists, they are beginning to recognize that the patient in front of the client is not just a diagnosis or a pathology, that's a person, and that they as therapists have to grow. I think that's the great thing when I'm listening to what you, both of you are saying.
You know, I'm getting hopeful, my friends, that people who are psychiatrists around the world may begin to think this way more. We have a large contingent of psychiatrists coming from the Far East to our conference in April. It's astonishing to me. And it just indicates that there may be a worldwide feeling in psychiatry that we have to start paying more attention to our real patients and not to our imagined diagnoses, but to the people, the real people, and to care about them and be empathic toward them. Doug Smith in Alaska, your thoughts?
I was thinking about what Alberto said about he was daydreaming about maybe reentering therapy with you or with me. But, you know, there's something important about us therapists being emotionally healthy ourselves. And for many of us, that's achieved through having our own therapy. And of course, in psychoanalytic training, it's required. But I encourage it for anyone. But of course, therapy is not the only way to grow and become healthy, but it can be such a valuable way. And, you know, there's the old saying, you can only take someone as far as you've gone yourself. I think that's really true. And Peter, you were talking earlier about how what we provide is a safe environment where people know that they can reveal very openly to us, and we're not going to take advantage of that, but we're going to be holding their best interest at heart. We also, ideally anyway, also provide a healthy environment for people. We need to be our best, I think, try to be to the degree we can. Of course, we're all human. We all have our blind spots and hang-ups, but we need to be authentically ourselves and also do what we can to take good care of ourselves and be healthy ourselves, and then we can be able to help other people.
Hello?
Yeah, hello. I'm not hearing anything.
Here.
Are you hearing me?
I lost you for a couple of minutes, but I'm here again.
Oh, yes, I heard you that time, Peter, too. So I think we might have had a glitch, but maybe we're back on the air now.
Are you listening? Are you hearing me, Doc? Yes.
Yes, I hear you, Alberto. I'm not hearing Peter right now, though.
Yeah, I'm not hearing Peter either. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Okay, here I should be.
Oh, there, I hear you now, Peter. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, gosh. It's
me
and my technology.
I hope you didn't lose them all.
It's a miracle that we're all talking together and that I don't fumble the ball again and again and again. But I was thinking the same thing, Alberto, just before you said it. I was listening to your voice, and I was listening to Doug's voice, and I was saying, these men are so kind. If I ever needed to talk to someone other than Ginger, bless her, I would travel to Alaska or to South America. The kindness, the caring that you all display. And it is what I'm looking to keep emphasizing again and again, that it begins with our caring about each other, and then with whatever knowledge and wisdom we've learned, our professionalism, our restraint, our understanding, and that it doesn't matter that the person is psychotic or even brain injured, that all human beings need the same kind of caring and help. It doesn't matter if it's you when you are frightened, or your wife or husband when he or she is frightened, or your child, that we all basically need the same kind of caring relationship with ethical boundaries on it. The difference in therapy is that the person comes to a very controlled environment for a very specialized emphasis on a safe and protected relationship, but it's also ultimately what we want with each other. And when you and I get together, Doug, and you and I, Alberto, we get together, we're going to provide that to each other as friends.
It's the best medicine we have.
Others in a certain way. Yes, Doug?
I said it's the best medicine we have. The most powerful healing force in the universe, I think, is the power of love. And love is not in a pill. It's not even scientific. It's in that spiritual dimension, the human connection that we can form with each other. And when people are suffering, it's not just a love cure. I don't think that they just need love, but they need to be in the presence of a healing, caring person in order to find healing for themselves.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And the three of us would differ, I think, a fair amount in what we offer in that setting, because we're offering the best of ourselves.
That's
and
right.
I probably do a lot more cognitive level stuff than you might do. I think you might do more of the dreamlike stuff than I do. But I'm not sure, but I think we might at different times. I think Alberto is going to be providing a lot of educational stuff that I wouldn't provide. But we're all starting with this respect for the other human being and offering the best we have to offer. And that's going to differ from therapist to therapist, no matter how we may try to standardize the therapy. We really can't, because it starts with what individual human beings offer each other. And I imagine I have agreement on that.
I do. It's again, we have to be ourselves and genuinely ourselves. And if that carries you towards your own style of therapy, which is different than mine, then I say that's great. You do your style, you be you. I'll do my style, which is being me authentically.
And as a client, to those of you who are going to look for help, keep in mind the differences even among the three of us who share so much, and feel free to search for what you want from a therapist. And it by no means is necessarily going to come from a psychiatrist. It could come from a family therapist, a counselor, a psychologist, a social worker. Alberto, you wanted to say something.
Yes, just a very brief thing. As people can understand listening to us, I'm sure they know all that we share that we tolerate things, we accept people. But I'm sure there is one thing that the three of us we don't tolerate, and that's why I think we all three of us really try to be ethical. And one thing we don't tolerate is lies and our lies, right? And abuse.
Totally
people.
With you.
So that's something we don't tolerate, right? And so that's something that what we don't like is when any form of therapy is lying to people or is hiding important information from patients. That we don't tolerate, and we're not empathic with that, right? We're against that. and so that's something that I'm sure the three of us do share, and that's important of being ethical and liking the truth and really being against lies and against lack of respect. No, I think that respect for people and for human rights is something that you cannot tolerate. We can discuss all other things of diversity in people, but lies and lack of respect, I think we don't tolerate that. Am I wrong, Peter?
I think that the three of us have chosen unique ways of practicing because we're honest. We have put honesty above our power and authority. Any three of us could have, we have the character and the personality and the knowledge to have been presidents of psychiatric associations and leaders at NIMH. I was for a time a young leader at NIMH. But I think we've all chosen consciously at critical moments to do what we believe rather than what would get us necessarily ahead in the establishment. We're out of time at this point, so let me conclude now. Let me first thank you, Douglas Smith, Doug Smith from Alaska, Juneau, Alberto Ferguson from Columbia, I love you both. I admire you both. And this is Dr. Peter Bregan saying goodbye to the world that's listening.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bregan and his lifelong reform work on www.bregan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.